couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we've got Halloween weekend. I know that it's, you know, rolling into November. By the end of Sunday, we're a couple days into November, but Halloween was on Friday. It is a Halloween weekend. You can still watch horror movies and get away with it, which is why they're releasing Saw for the 10th anniversary. It's been 10 years since Saw came around and kind of revitalized horror movies, for good or for bad, if you didn't like the whole torture porn angle, which I'm reticent to call Saw torture porn. I'll talk about that a little bit more later when I talk about Saw as a release, because it's coming back in the theaters. We're also going to be talking about Nicole Kidman in Before I Go to Sleep. We're also going to be talking about Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler, Daniel Radcliffe in Horns, and a whole load of people in The ABCs of Death 2. We're also going to be talking about some news, big Marvel news, Trailer Park, box office prediction, and of course the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we do that, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com. And you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
There's two little bits of news I want to talk about before we get to the huge story. And the first one is Terminator Genesis has been revealed some plot details, which I actually don't read. I do not like when news is about how the plot's going to be and the story, because it can get so spoilery. So I haven't read it. As I understand, they do change some things, which is ridiculous. I mean, this whole franchise is kind of falling apart. But the EW, Entertainment Weekly, had two covers, and they had pictures from the movie. One of them featured Jai Courtney and who the woman is, I forget. And the other one was, I think it's Jason Clark, but more importantly, Matt Smith, you know, the 11th Doctor from Doctor Who. And these covers are getting just hammered in the online press and hammered by geeks because they're not that good. They're not all that exciting. And Jai Courtney, I mean, he literally looks like he's trying not to look like himself because he knows he's box office poison. After doing movies like Live Free or Die Hard and Jack Reacher, neither of which did well, especially when teamed with a mega superstar, Tom Cruise and Bruce Willis. Look, they need to stop trying to make Jai Courtney happen the way they need to stop making Sam Worthington happen. In fact, I think they might be the same person. Has anyone seen them together? Put them in a movie together, headline them, and have the movie make $2 million worldwide, and then maybe everyone will realize these guys aren't movie stars. The next piece of news is Divergent 2, which is Insurgent, is going to be in 3D, which I guess are hoping will be enough to save the stupidity of the first film, because I didn't like that movie. I've heard, my wife's read the books, that the books, there's a rate of attrition, that they get worse as they go along. I mean, Divergent did well enough, but Insurgent, let's see if it can keep up, because either of those movies tend to rise and do better, like the Harry Potter movies, or they fall down and they have diminishing returns, like Percy Jackson. All right, the big piece of news this week, though, Marvel Studios had a huge information dump this week about their release schedule and some of the movies that are coming out. Now, some of them we already know. You know, obviously, next summer, May 1st, you've got The Avengers Age of Ultron, and July 17th, you've got Ant-Man. But what they've done is they released their whole slate all the way through 2019. And what's interesting about it is it's proof that Marvel continuously beats DC at this game right now, because all of the release dates for the Marvel movies are tentpole dates. They're either in May, June, July, or November. You don't have March, August, and April releases that the DC schedule did when they put that out a couple weeks ago. So it shows that Marvel is actually still the bigger fish in this pond. But a couple things to note. Doctor Strange is going to be November 4th, 2016. I think we already knew that. And Benedict Cumberbatch is now being rumored, but not completely confirmed, that he's going to play Doctor Strange. And of course, we had Joaquin Phoenix being rumored. Until they actually ink a deal, I'm not even worrying about who's playing Doctor Strange. More importantly, on November 3rd, 2017, they're going to have a Black Panther movie. And it's going to be starring Chadwick Boseman. Now, this is significant, not because it's at all saying that Black Panther was a real person. You know, because isn't that what Chadwick Boseman plays? I mean, he played Jackie Robinson, then he played James Brown. Well, now he's going to be playing somebody completely fictitious, Black Panther. And what's important about this one is it's the first big superhero movie from either Marvel or DC on this sort of cinematic universe level that has a black hero. Now, DC is doing a Cyborg movie, which is the black guy from the comics, but that's 3 years after the Black Panther movie comes out. Now, the other piece, and we already knew this, that Avengers is going to have a two-part, May 4th, 2018, and then May 3rd, 2019, a two-part Infinity War series. Some people are saying Avengers 3, part 1, and part... No, it's Avengers 3 and 4. There is no part 1 and part 2. There's part 1 and part 2 to the story, but they're two separate movies. There's going to be The Inhumans, November 2nd, 2018, and there's going to be a Captain Marvel movie, July 6th, 2018, and this is, of course, Marvel's version of Captain Marvel, not Shazam, which, again, Marvel's beating them to the punch because Shazam is coming out a year later. So fail on DC, Marvel is capitalizing on the Captain Marvel name that nobody really knows outside of people who read the comics. You know, people know who Shazam is already, but the Captain Marvel from the comics is something that exists only to the comic book fans. Now, of course, idiots are out there complaining that there's no Black Widow movie. Oh, there's no Black Widow, no Black Widow. Well, she's also heavily featured in the Avengers and the Captain America series, so you've got plenty of Black Widow. And then, of course, there's also speculation of Spider-Man joining in for Avengers 3 and 4. And the big question is, will that happen? Well, here's the thing. I think Sony wants it, but Sony also does not want to give up anything. And it's really Marvel's call because it's how far Marvel will allow Sony to be. Sony wants to be part of this. Who wouldn't want to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe under Marvel? But Sony doesn't want to lose that property. So I'm sure there's a lot of negotiation going on there. Kevin Feige has come out and said some things about it. But again, until things happen, I'm not bothering to pay attention. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to hit is Big Eyes, which opens on December 25th. This is Tim Burton's new film about a real painter from Los Angeles.
You're going to love this stuff.
Why are their eyes so big?
The eyes are the windows of the soul.
That's why I paint them so big. I've always done it that way.
Why are you lying?
Sadly, people don't buy lady art.
The painting says keen.
I'm keen, you're keen.
Smile.
I remember when Mama painted that.
You're confused. I painted that.
This is sort of a diversion for Tim Burton for several reasons. First of all, it's not just sort of like an adaptation of some bizarre story. It's a true-to-life story. Now, he's done stuff like this before in some of his best work. Ed Wood is a fantastic biopic. Also, Big Fish, even though that's a fictional story, it plays a little bit more like a biopic. He just does these every now and then. They're very, very good. So I'm looking forward to Big Eyes, and it's also not out there. It has a feel of Tim Burton, but it's not completely Tim Burton. I just wonder if they're going to get like Lizzie Kaplan and Emma Stone and Zooey Deschanel to promote this movie because they have such huge eyes. The next trailer to play is The Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death, which opens on January 2nd.
So where are you headed?
We're heading to Chris and Gifford. They have no other relatives, so we're taking them to a house in the country.
Does anybody else live on the island?
The place has been deserted for years.
So cold in here. Hello? Are you sure there's nobody else living here?
I think you should keep your visions to yourself.
This is, of course, a sequel to the Daniel Radcliffe movie a couple years ago. I like the return of the Hammer horror. I like the return of the sort of British horror to American cinema. So even if you have something like The Quiet Ones, which wasn't very good, I kind of like the fact that they're not just making some crappy found footage movie with a bunch of kids from the suburbs. It's a little bit different of a movie, and it kind of harkens back to Hammer horror. And this one looks pretty decent. I mean, you can sometimes have decent horror movies coming out in January. I mean, at least it's not some crappy found footage movie. That's all I've got to say about that. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Before I Go to Sleep and The ABCs of Death 2. Kevin Carr coming at you with Fat Guys at the Movies. We are rolling into our movie reviews, actual proper movie reviews, after just looking at some trailers and hearing some news about what's happening in the movie world. The first movie that we're actually going to cover is Before I Go to Sleep. A woman who suffers amnesia from an accident starts remembering her past and begins to suspect everyone around her.
My name is Christine Lucas and I'm an amnesiac. Tonight, as I sleep, my mind will erase everything I know today.
Hello?
Christine, it's Dr. Nash. You won't remember me.
10 years ago, you were found with repeated blows to the head. Who tried to kill me?
No one knows.
What?
No one but you.
This one kind of flew completely under the radar, and it did so because it's not released by a major company. It's not like Sony or Warner Brothers or Disney. It's released by Clarice Entertainment, which, if I recall correctly, its biggest claim to fame was the flop Legends of Oz, which was it also embroiled in possible financial scandal. And this just sort of came out of nowhere. I mean, I'd heard about this movie, but I've seen almost no advertisements for it. It kind of comes out with a whimper. They didn't screen it in Columbus, which is where I'm from. And what's hilarious is when I actually went to the movie and paid my $10 to go see it, the girl at the ticket booth, she said, "Oh, I didn't even know this was opening." I'm like, "You work in a movie theater. It's literally the first movie on your list, because not a movie at the theater that I went to this starts with an A. If the people of the movie theater aren't even aware it's happening, this movie's not going to do well. And there's good reason for that. It has a great cast. I mean, it has Nicole Kidman, it has Colin Firth, it has Mark Strong. This is a good, solid cast. I mean, these are, two of them are Academy Award, at least nominees, winners. I know Colin Firth, I think Nicole Kidman won an Oscar. They got a lot of credibility behind this. This movie is so freaking boring. It is so boring. I mean, the trailer makes it sound kind of cool. It makes it sound almost like a horror movie. It's not. It's not a horror movie. It's no more a horror movie than Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day is. But that movie's good. This one is just, it's dull. And there's, what's such a shame is it has such a great kernel of an idea. This whole thing where this woman has the memento, sort of short-term memory. Actually, it's more like the amnesia from 51st Dates, where she can only remember things until she goes to sleep, and then she wakes up the next day, her mind's kind of wiped again, and she's back to square one. There's a lot of opportunity for some really great stuff there, but it's just so freaking dull. It becomes just a whole series of people talking to each other, and Nicole Kidman, literally has this deer in the headlights look throughout the film. You're given really nothing to identify with her as a character, and yes, she's supposed to be a blank, but you really don't think she has doing much work to it. She just sort of wandering around the movie in a daze. I don't know. Did she like take too much cough syrup every time she went on set? This movie is just extremely, extremely dull. Has some great stuff going on in terms of the ideas and even some twists, which are they're kind of cheesy. But it just the execution. It's as boring as watching two turtles play chess. It is such a dull movie. And the movie isn't aware of how dull it is. It thinks it's being brilliant. It thinks it's being emotional. It thinks it's being touching at times. The music is trying to constantly convince you that it is not a boring film, although it is. I mean, it has almost a Hitchcock kind of soundtrack, which it's a great soundtrack until you realize nothing's happening. And it's just this big bundle of missed opportunities. So I've just got to say that Before I Go to Sleep, put me to sleep. It sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is The ABCs of Death 2. The sequel to the 2013 horror hit features 26 short films about death, one for each letter of the alphabet.
Please do not kill me. Father, please come.
The love of God, finish this.
Are you
this is for real?
Of course it's real, because someone's going to get punched in a minute.
Turn around!
What are you doing in there?
I'm here every night.
I remember when the first ABCs of Death was announced, and there was a lot of people trying to... They're submitting ideas and short films to become directors on the project because they needed 26 of them. And there are some bigger names like Ty West in the first one and Ben Wheatley. These are bigger names in especially in horror. And they ended up doing a couple segments, but it was open field. And there was some pretty innovative stuff. There was a lot of what I would call borderline amateur filmmaking in the first film it worked for what it was, but it wasn't anything to really write home about. I'd say about half of the alphabet, 12 or 13 or 14 of the short films in the first one were just sort of meh, and I could take or leave. Plus, it ran really long. It was like well over 2 hours. This one is much tighter. It seems more streamlined. It seems like either the credibility or the gravitas that this film carries really stepped up the game for some of the directors involved. And while not every short is a winner, I mean, there's 26 of them. You get 26 short films. You're going to find some that are just, it has some pretty innovative stuff happening. It has this one piece of animation that's just disturbing, almost like a David Lynch style of animation. And it's fascinating to watch. It's gross and disturbing and twisted, but it's fascinating to watch. They have a neat take on sort of a kid's video game world. The other thing, and I noticed this, the first one, and this is going to sound extremely ethnocentric, but the first one had a lot of movies with foreign language in them. The first one had a lot of Asian directors. It had a lot of Spanish directors. And it's very true that there's some very innovative stuff happening in Asia, especially in terms of horror. Same thing in France and Spain and even Mexico and some of the non-English speaking countries. This one, I don't think it necessarily has less of an international focus, but it's definitely not as dialogue driven. And that actually bodes well for it. And I like that way of making it for a wider audience, not by saying, well, everything has to be in English, because that would just be stupid. But it has a lot of things where there's a couple things that I know there were foreign directors because the names looked, again, this sounds so ethnocentric, the names looked foreign. There are a whole bunch of them that had no dialogue in them or like one line. And there were only a handful of them that really, really relied heavily on dialogue. It was more a bizarre presentation of things. And in that level, I thought it was really good. There was one or two that I thought were kind of amateurish that harkened back to what I had problems with the first one. But this one's a huge step up from the first ABCs of Death. And the first ABCs of Death was pretty good anyways. So I'm going to say that the ABCs of Death 2 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Check it out. It's Halloween. Find it. You can get it online in VOD, or if you're lucky enough, it might be playing at a theater near you. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Nightcrawler and Horns. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling on into the films. Let's talk about Nightcrawler. This is, of course, the one starring Jake Gyllenhaal. A driven freelance videographer goes to dangerous and illegal lengths to get the most valuable news footage.
I'm starting a TV news business.
We're taking the next right.
Good, stupid!
Repeat the police.
I will never ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
Excuse me, I have something you'll be very excited about.
You have a good eye. I want you to contact me when you have something.
Something like this.
Think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
You will be seeing me again.
This is one of those films that's sort of a profile of a sociopath. Not as out there and overt and almost comical as something like American Psycho. But this is not meant to make you feel good either just about yourself or the human race. It is meant to examine sort of the worst of the worst people who feed off of misery. And it comes that way by local news. And of course, he's very driven. He picks video journalism. And all he's looking for is the sort of if it bleeds, it leads kind of story. I think it works. There's a lot of things that do work about it. I think Jake Gyllenhaal does a great job acting. I think he plays creepy, disturbed sociopath pretty well. He goes over the line a little bit, but not so far that it's annoying. But he does come off as a little bit of a caricature at times, especially in particular scenes. When he's given a chance to sort of grandstand. It's kind of like when Jesse Eisenberg played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network. It was a good performance, and I know a lot of people loved the Aaron Sorkin fast-talking dialogue, but it was when he did those big, long speeches that took me out of the movie, because I'm like, nobody is ready with those words at that time. And while it sounds good for, you know, that kind of snappy dialogue, it felt disingenuous to me. And that's where I felt Nightcrawler breaks down, is when he's given almost too much grandstanding and too much soliloquy to work with. It's just almost too obvious. This guy's bonkers and this guy has serious, serious issues in the brain. The other thing that I kind of take issue with the movie is I know that there's a lot of vultures in journalism, in news and in local news, but I mean, do enough people really watch local news? It seems to me that this movie puts so much emphasis on how important it is to get this certain footage every day for the news broadcast. And I mean, I don't live in LA, so I don't know how grand that is, but I've watched news. I've done stuff work at a station before, and I've come in on the morning show. And yeah, they'll sometimes have exclusive video, but it's not, I mean, for stuff happening locally, but this is not a make or break the news type thing. It's not worth spending the money and the attention that they do to get this information and this video from him. It's nice to have now and then, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem real at times because I don't think enough people really care or pay attention to the local news. Or the local news broadcast, that is. I don't think people are switching stations just because they want to see exclusive footage, unless it's something so juicy that it's hits it out of the park. Otherwise, just send your camera crew out there and take pictures of police cars at the scene. And in this sense, it has to take place today because he's using GPS and cell phones and digital cameras, and that's kind of part of his ability to be so mobile and get the information out there and uploaded and to the stations quickly. So it only works, the movie only works if it takes place today. But it just doesn't quite seem believable. I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't watch local news, which is why I sort of discount it, I guess. So ultimately, while it has some great performances and it's very dark and it's a very well-made movie, it isn't a perfect film. So I'm just going to give it a kind of rocks right now.
It kind of rocks.
Maybe it'll grow in me as award season comes through. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Horns, starring Daniel Radcliffe as a young man accused of murdering his girlfriend who suddenly starts to grow devil's horns, which have a bizarre, truthful, and malevolent effect on people.
What does it feel like to get away with murder?
Someone comes on to save your soul.
I should ask the devil to punish you ever killed.
How do I look? Did you notice anything unusual?
And then horns?
Everyone in this town is going crazy. I think it's because of me and these horns.
You killed that innocent girl, now the devil has claimed you.
I didn't kill her father, and now people are telling me all these things I don't want to hear.
This is written by Joe Hill, who is actually Stephen King's son. His name's Joe King, and he goes by Joe Hill, so people don't know he's Stephen King's son. But every time you mention Joe Hill, people are like, oh yeah, that's Stephen King's son. It's a big shadow to come out from under. I've never read any of Joe Hill's stuff, but I've read a lot of Stephen King stuff. And you can absolutely 100% see the influence of Stephen King in his son's work. Now, that's not a bad thing. But it does sort of feel like it comes from the world of Stephen King, because Stephen King's his dad. So whatever influenced Stephen King is also influencing his son. And you see a lot of that literally the sort of literary elements, like, you know, group of friends in a small town, and it really feels like it was a Stephen King book as well. It just sort of like the setting and the characters that they have, and even some of the behavior of some of the characters. It's not a perfect film. It's an interesting movie. It's directed by Alexandre Aja, or Aja. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I'm sorry. He, of course, did The Hills Have Eyes and Piranha 3D, High Tension, which was a fantastically disturbing movie. And I like his work a lot. And his version of Horns isn't as extreme as some of the stuff he does, but it holds together. The problem is that while there's this fantastic fantasy element to it, this whole truthfulness that comes from people, and they're truthful not about good things, they're truthful about their worst part of their personality. But what's great about these scenes is it works for what it is in the framework. But ultimately, when you strip away all of the fantastic elements with the horns and the confessions that people have, it's really just a stupid love story of a manic pixie dream girl. I mean, it's the story is Juno Temple plays his girlfriend and she's been murdered and he's suspected of it and he's saying he didn't do it. But of course, the town is turning on him and they're trying to get him to go to jail for it or to privately kill him for it, which, you know, that's kind of a story I've seen a dozen times. And Juno Temple, she's just sort of like her character. So much focus is on how much, oh, I love you, and I miss you, and everything. And you just sort of see her character, and you're like, she's okay. But I really don't see what the great appeal is for her. And maybe that's just me, because I'm a jerk. I don't know. But ultimately, that's the basis of the story. It's a manic pixie dream girl romance, where she gets murdered, and then he turns into a devil. Which, that part's interesting. But sort of the twists and turns and some of the plot reveals and when you finally get to the end, there's some fantastic elements to it, but there's also some very tired and cliche elements. It's different. It's one of the more different movies you're going to see. And it's Halloween weekend still, you know, even if it's November, it's Halloween weekend. So it's worth seeing if you have a theater nearby showing it, because it is in limited release. And I'm not sure when it's hitting on demand, but it's something to watch. It's different. And that's probably one of the biggest things that has going for it. I'll tell you, this weekend, we've got some movies that are not necessarily going to be the best of the year, but they are very different from what you normally see, and that gives it worth a look.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Saw, the 10th anniversary, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are wrapping things up. One last big push for horror movies. Yeah, I know, November and all. We got to start getting ready for Turkey Day. We got to start getting ready for Christmas. It was so depressing. Let me tell you, I was at the store with my kids several days before Halloween, like maybe even a week or so before, even less than a week before Halloween, because they wanted to pick up one final little thing or whatever for trick-or-treat, like glow sticks or whatever. And the Christmas decorations were already invading the space that they had for the Halloween decorations. It was just so sad to see Christmas encroaching so quickly? And I get it. They're trying to sell stuff and they're trying to have everything stocked. So, you know, when November 1st would hit, it would, you know, you can just go right into Christmas season. But it just seems sort of crass. Give the horror movies, give the horror elements a chance to stick around. Let the rats and the spider webs and the witches and the goblins and the skeletons, at least let them have it until Halloween. And then you can put up all the Christmas decorations and ignore the turkeys. The one thing that is being released this week is Saw, the 10th anniversary. They're just re-releasing the original movie from 2004 into the theaters. I was a fan of Saw. I liked the first one. Now, the series has its ups and downs. But then again, any movie that goes to seven movies that aren't set out and laid forth as a full continuous story, like, say, the Harry Potter films, any series that just reaches sequel after sequel after sequel, when you get to seven, you're going to have some franchise rot going on there. Yeah, the later films aren't that good, but the first one was really good, and the second one was okay, and you know, kind of went along from there. I watched it actually on video not too long ago, because I had to do an article on it, and it does hold up. It still works as a movie. Now, it's only 10 years old, so, I mean, we're not talking about something that came out in the 40s, but yeah, Saw is interesting. I don't know how well it's going to play, you know, through the rest of the weekend or through next week, but, you know, now's your chance. You can still go check it out. Saw, the 10th anniversary. I don't have a trailer for it because, well, you know, it's a 10-year-old movie. Let's also talk a little bit more about some of the horror movies that went through in October, because I'm such a horror movie fan, and yeah, I know it's November, and I know that we are moving into the Peace on Earth, Goodwill to Men, all that nonsense, but let's just tip our hats again at horror movies. I watched more than 80 movies in the entire month of October. Over 65 of them were horror movies. If you want to see a list, I may not have a blurb on everyone, but if you want to see a list, go to fatguysatthemovies.com and you'll see a little click there that says, you know, 31 horror movies. Check that. You can see all the movies I watched. Now, there were three things that went on this month with horror movies that allowed me to get to that number. And of course, it ate up a lot of my time because it takes, you know, a couple hours to watch a movie. First of all, the first weekend I went to a friend's house and we watched all 10 Halloween movies. He had bought the box set, started at like noon on a Saturday. We stayed up all night long watching them. We even sat through the bitter two Rob Zombie movies, the remake and its sequel. And, you know, once you get to Halloween H2O, yeah, five and six are goofy. And then H2O is a really good movie. Then it just takes a dive into Resurrection, Halloween Resurrection, which is terrible. And then the zombie movies are even worse. This is one that, I mean, talk about just hitting the ground and then Halloween remake, which is probably the dirt at the dirt. And then Zombie digs below the dirt and goes to Halloween 2, which is so bad. But the first one's still incredible. And watched it again on Halloween. At the end, I bookended the month with it. Halloween 2's not bad. The original Halloween 2's okay for just sort of like an 80s slasher. And I always have great love for Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, even though it makes no sense in the scheme of the whole Halloween series. But it's a great film. It's a great sort of throwback, nostalgic 80s goofy movie. And I really enjoy it. The other thing that went on this past month was I went to the 666th annual 24-hour horror movie marathon here in Columbus, Ohio, where I saw a whole range of movies, stuff like Your Next, which came out last year and played like gangbusters with the audience. Also, Werner Herzog's Nosferatu and The Invisible Man and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the 4K restoration, and The Shining, and Housebound, a New Zealand movie that's really kind of out there. The Satanist, which is basically a softcore porn movie pretending to be a horror film just so it could have been released back in 1965 or 68 when it came out. It's terrible, but it's a lot of fun to sort of riff on, sort of Mystery Science Theater style. So yeah, that was a great event, and there was like a dozen movies at that. And then I also had bought the Universal box set for the Universal Monsters, all 31 films. It says 30 films on the box, but it's actually 31 because you got to count the Spanish version of Dracula, which what they did is they went and they shot this version of Dracula at night on the same set back in 1931. And it's a really interesting sort of alternate take. I mean, it's in Spanish, but it's a great alternate take to Todd Browning's Dracula. And while Bela Lugosi is the gold standard for the Count, there are some neat things in the movie itself that were maybe arguably better than Browning's Dracula. But it was neat to watch all of those. Now, consequently, the most represented decade was the 1940s, where there were almost two dozen films. 17 of them were Universal Monster movies. yeah, you had all the Wolfman, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and all the Mummy sequels all came out in the 40s. But it was interesting to cram all that into 1 month. 31 films crammed into 1 month, and that's in addition to the other 50 I saw. So anyways, that was my fun Halloween, and getting ready for Christmas. Well, getting ready for Thanksgiving, and then Christmas. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office real quick. Was I correct? I said that Ouija was going to win with $17 million. Once again, every now and then, I am a genius, and I will sometimes make the best predictions you'll ever hear in the industry. Ouija made just under $20 million, just barely under $20 million. So that was pretty doggone close, insane, $18 million. I said John Wick was going to play soft. It actually played better. It was $14.5 million. And then it went down from there with Fury, Gone Girl, and ratcheted down to the same list that we've had, you know, in terms of the same order. Now, it's going to be hard to predict this week because the only new films are Nightcrawler and Before I Go to Sleep, neither of which is getting really a big marketing push, and neither of which is what you'd call a tentpole release or a big movie release. So, Saw is going to be out there, but I think it's really only going to, it's all of the lion's share of its business is going to be on Friday, if any. And I just don't see any of the others. I mean, the other stuff like the ABCs of Death 2 and Horns, those are limited releases. I'm going to say Nightcrawler is going to take the weekend because it's going up against Ouija. And I think Ouija burns out its first weekend. But I think it's only going to be about $10 million for Nightcrawler. It's not going to be a huge weekend. It's Halloween. People have been going to parties all week. They don't have time to watch movies. They watch movies leading up to it because you can watch on Netflix and Amazon and on DVD and Blu-ray. All right, with that sound, that means we're going to be rolling into the world-famous DVD Roundup. A handful of movies this week. Delivers from Evil, if you wanted to get that last horror movie for the year, for October. That's the one with Eric Bana, and he plays, it's a supposedly true story of a detective who dealt with exorcism and evil spirits. There's also Begin Again, which is up for award consideration. This is, I believe, from the Weinstein Company, and it stars Mark Ruffalo as a sort of down-on-his-luck record producer and Keira Knightley as a young artist, and they get together, and he's trying to help her get noticed. And this is by the people who did Once, which I did not like, but apparently everybody else did. So if you liked Once, you can sort of see its follow-up. It took him a couple years, but... There's also America, which is Dinesh D'Souza's latest film about, you know, examining if America never existed. This is ultimately a political movie. I mean, if you lean to the right, you're going to love it. If you lean to the left, you're going to hate it. I mean, that's where the line's drawn on this one. That's, again, I'm not making a political statement about it. I'm just recognizing that that's the kind of movie this is. It's the antithesis of a Michael Moore movie, where if you're on the right, you're not going to like Michael Moore stuff. If you're on the left, you're going to love Michael Moore stuff. You're going to embrace it. So, that's really what it is. And so, you know, figure out where your political leanings are and decide whether or not you're going to see that movie. WKRP in Cincinnati, the complete series. And this is what's interesting about it is they've gone and restored a large portion of the music that was in the show. Because, oh, when they broadcast it, they used like Pink Floyd and these classic rock sounds. When Fox put it on DVD, gosh, like 10 years ago, they didn't have that. They just added just sort of generic background music, and people got really cheesed off. And that's one thing that Shout Factory is doing that is great. They are restoring the music when they can, and that's good, because I hate when they have these musicians who won't give up the rights. And I mean, I think it's fine if you want to ask for more money, but be reasonable. This is your art was used to make more art, so let this happen. So they're restoring, there's still like 100 or so songs that aren't restored because they can't do some of them. But they did a lot to get those restored. There's a couple other like sort of smaller ones. There's Thomas and Friends, The Christmas Engine. So Christmas season's already starting with Thomas the Tank Engine. And Beethoven's Treasure Tale, which is not a cartoon. It's not Christmas, but it's a kid's movie with a giant St. Bernard. The stinger of the week is Wish I Was Here. This one is Zach Braff's Kickstarter movie that was completely pretentious and egocentric, and he got other people to pay for it. Wasn't that good? It kind of went nowhere, and there you go. Next week, we're going to be launching into the big tentpole movies of the fall with Big Hero 6. We're going to be talking about Interstellar, the new Christopher Nolan movie, and of course Laggies, which is a much smaller movie, finally getting a wider release. Until then, let's have a fat time in the movies.